Hey guys and ghouls.
That was so enthusiastic.
It's all the energy I have right now.
You didn't say hey there again, and it's really gonna throw me off.
No, hey just there, kidding. Guys and ghouls.
You're tuned into a broadcast from the Belfry. Am I matching your levels right now?
I don't know, maybe.
Okay. An unprepared podcast for the morbidly curious.
My name's Sanjay. Two people away from me is Georgia. How are you doing today?
Better than you.
Obviously. Today we got another People That Aren't Just Us podcast, because we know you guys love it when there's other people that aren't us. And I love it because I talk less. So next to me directly...
Because you talk so much in the first place.
I do. Next to me directly is Hope. Hope, say what's up.
What's up?
Yeah, that's what I
you
said.
You don't have to sit on the bed making no noise, pretending you don't exist today.
Exactly. Well, I actually get to be included today.
Exactly. Inclusion is inclusion, as the kids say. Three people... Why is my hand... Oh, that's why my hands are dirty. Okay, three people away from me is Stu. Stu, say hi to the people.
Hi, people.
That's it. Yep. Wait, this is where you say what we're doing. What are we doing today?
Well, I've just been calling it Valentine's Special. Because we have our Valentines with us. I don't know.
That's true. Mine's in the other room. It's Rocket. He's very cute. I love him.
God, you're so neglectful.
I am. That's true. Mostly to myself, but also to those I care about, so.
Clearly.
Yep.
I saw Rocket. He didn't run away right away.
Nice.
It's great.
Saw his dumb foot, like, live.
Yeah, it's so cute. Yeah, it's
so dumb. Sweet. So we're talking about Valentine things. Kind of. We're starting a month of, I think.
This isn't going to be the first
it's
episode
not?
Of the
okay,
month.
Okay, never
so,
mind.
No, we already started the month.
In general, we're talking about crimes of passion to celebrate this Valentine's Day. So everyone in this room is going to talk about a crime of passion. I'll start for many reasons. First, I didn't do research, really, like, per se.
Shocker.
But I have a passion fruit LaCroix. I listened to Passion Fruit by Drake. I murdered my insides last night for a while with drinking and rolling around, so that was nice. So I think I'm overqualified, some would say, for this thing. So mine's gonna be short because it upset me. So my crime of passion is Marvin Gaye. Fun fact, I didn't know Marvin Gaye was dead until I did this.
Oh my god.
I thought
god.
He was alive. So that was a shock to start off.
Why did you think that he hadn't produced any new sexy music for a long time?
Because he's old. I thought he just retired. And that is not true at all.
So, I knew that he was dead, but I did not know how he died.
In a way, he is retired. But
permanently, yeah. That's just not solid. This also isn't like a fun story, really. So for those of you who don't know, Marvin Gaye was a Motown singer back in the day. I also listened to Marvin Gaye music as Stu and Georgia showed up, so more preparation. He sang Ain't No Mountain High Enough. Mm-hmm. He also sang the song Sexual Healing, which maybe we'll have to beep out. I don't know if I can say sexual on a podcast. It's never happened before. This is just a whole new frontier.
I'm pretty sure you said sexual before.
Probably, actually, and grosser stuff.
It's not the weirdest thing we've ever said.
So, his birth name is Marvin Pence Gay Jr. It's gay without an E, but his performance name is gay with an E, because he didn't want to be made fun of. So, yeah, I guess...
That makes sense.
Yeah. He was born in the, like, almost in 1940. He was born in 39. This dude would have been hella dead, like, even if he wasn't murdered.
He would have been so dead. My grandma was born in... before that, and she's still alive.
Oh, never mind then. He might still be alive. He's out there somewhere with Prince and Michael Jackson and Tupac, just living the dream. So he sang a lot. He did that. His family life really sucked. And
Jimmy Hoffa, that's the other one I was thinking of.
Who's Jimmy Hoffa?
A guy that's dead, but not dead.
Okay.
That took me a really long time to remember his name. Oh my god.
On April 1st, 1984, he was at his house living or hanging out with his parents and, you know, whatever. And his dad was being a raging shit pile and was like, I'm going to beat my wife. And they, like, the family had some severe paranoia already. So they'd been, like, stockpiling weapons. Specifically, Marvin Gaye, like, had been, like, slowly accruing, like, guns and stuff and other firearms. And
what was their paranoia about?
I think getting robbed. Like, pretty sure it's getting robbed. It doesn't say in this, but it said in whatever else I read.
Mm.
So, Yeah, he had given his dad a gun before. His dad was like, I'm gonna beat my wife. And Marvin Gaye Jr. was like, don't beat my mom, please. And, like, got him to fuck off. And his dad was, like, foiled again. But then he left the room and came back with a gun and was like, bang. So that did that. He got shot twice. It was like once. Yeah, he got shot in the heart, point blank, and then got shot in the shoulder. The heart shot killed him, so who's to say why he shot him in the shoulder? Insult to injury? Maybe. But he... Marvin Gaye Sr. initially got charged with... Oh yeah, Marvin Gaye Jr. died. I think I said that.
Yeah.
Marvin Gaye Sr. initially got charged with first-degree murder because, you know, he shot and killed a dude, but it got dropped to voluntary manslaughter because it was a, like, heat-of-the-moment thing, and he later was found to have a brain tumor, so they attribute that to, like, part of why he, like, snapped and was so aggressive as well. So, yeah, for its crime of passion, Marvin Gaye Jr., definitely dead, definitely saying Ain't No Mountain High Enough. His dad sucked, but had a tumor, so I guess it all evens out. I think his dad died in, like, 2005, so.
See, and he would have been way older.
1998.
He still would have been way old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. And you would have had a son still, so.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, so how old was Marvin Gaye when he was killed?
Like 40.
Okay. It wasn't that important. Yeah. I was just curious.
1984 from... Wait, it should just say, so actually.
He was like 45.
He was 44. You sound like an idiot. It wasn't his birthday yet. Oh, you're next. We're going in okay. This order.
No, so, I'm going last, so we're skipping.
Okay.
I want to go last.
I don't care what
no,
you
want. No, Stu's sitting over there. He has to go last.
No, I have a thing and you're going to ruin it, so you're going last.
Okay.
Or I'm going last.
Okay, so the first murder I'm going to talk about, which, first of all, any listener who doesn't know me, which is some of you, most, I don't know how many of you are listening.
We have like 6 listeners and they probably all live in the city, so just kidding.
Either way, I am very passionate about true crime, and the only podcasts I listen to aside from this one are true crime related. So I am very prepared and excited for this topic. The first person I'm going to talk about is Lisa Nowak.
Was she the astronaut?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they actually made a movie about her last year starring Natalie Portman, and I wanted to see it, and then I didn't see anything about it when it came out. I don't know anybody who has seen it. I am assuming it did not do well.
Are you talking about Interstellar?
No,
that's not.
Are you talking about Gravity?
No,
I also
are
just
you talking about Space Cowboys?
Think that Natalie Portman ruins all movies that she's
what?
In.
She was in the prequels.
Natalie Portman.
They were
is,
gems.
Okay, so
case and point.
Okay,
best Star Wars movies.
But
best
she was
Star
Wars also movies. In Annihilation and Black Swan. She's a fantastic
Black Swan
actress.
Was okay, what was she in that we were watching the other day when I got really annoyed? This Thor. Why does she have to no?
Okay, so we can't get into this because I'm going to be upset.
Also, she's in Natalie's Rap by the Lonely Island.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a gem.
So anyways, Lisa Nowak. The movie that came out in 2019 was called Lucy in the Sky because in this movie they adapted the astronaut's name to be Lucy instead of Lisa because it's just loosely based on her life.
Was she also, is that a Neil Diamond song?
No!
No, that's Elton John's song.
Oh my god.
Lucy in the Sky.
Beatles.
Yeah,
I mean Beatles.
Oh,
I'm
I don't
gonna,
know the Beatles.
I'm gonna commit a crime of passion right now. Okay.
What a murder
so
live.
Let's move on here. So she had grown up and always wanted to like go to space and had always wanted to be an astronaut. So she was selected to be an astronaut in 1996, which, shout out to my sister, that was the year she was born. She's never going to listen to this, but... then she qualified as a mission specialist in robotics, and in July of 2006, got to go to space in the crew of the International Space Station. She completed several spacewalks during that time and had a total of 13 days in space. And she married and had 3 kids, and then in 2004 she started an affair with another astronaut who I know his name, but I have no idea how to pronounce it.
I want to try.
I'm pretty sure. Well, no, I'm not pretty sure.
He's gonna say it with an accent. Wait for it.
Oiflin.
Oiflin.
Yeah.
Maybe. It could be.
Stu, who's how do you say? Pronounce this name?
Are we going to say Oflin?
Yeah, Oflin was kind of what... Anyways.
Like Orschlin's.
Like yeah. Orphan.
So...
With more consonants and vowels.
I also didn't write down his first name. That's his last name. I don't know what his first name was. But he was also married when they started this affair. He ended up divorcing his wife, and she separated from her husband in, like, super early 2007. But then, like, a couple weeks after she separated from her husband... he told her that he was in a committed relationship with an Air Force captain named Colleen Shipman. This understandably made Lisa upset, but not understandably, she then broke into Oflin's house and read all of his emails with Captain Shipman. And then on February 4th, so like a month after all this happened, she drove from Houston to Orlando, Florida, where Captain Shipman was coming back from...
Space.
No, I don't know where she was coming back from, but she was, like, arriving at the airport. So, Lisa Nowak, like, was driving there to meet her at the airport. And, she drove, 900 miles. And it was initially reported, although she is now denying it, but it's way more interesting if this did happen. The police ended up finding a bunch of adult diapers in her car, and it was initially reported that she wore them. Yeah, mm-hmm. That she wore them so she didn't have to stop to go to the bathroom anywhere on her 900-mile drive.
That's just true. That's the only fact I remember when, like, this was happening in the news, was that a crazy astronaut put on a diaper and drove to kill someone.
Yeah,
like,
so that's... she's now claiming that that didn't happen, and they were baby diapers for her children, but...
No.
That's not what happened.
I stopped by Costco on my way to murder. Like, yeah. No, that's not how that works.
So when she was driving, she also in her car had a box of latex gloves, a black wig, a BB gun with ammunition, pepper spray, trench coat, a drill hammer, which I don't know what that is, but it sounds like a murder
she
tool.
She made it. It's like Thor's hammer, but like with a drill bit
on
top.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. $585 in cash, her computer, several trash bags, and an 8-inch folding knife. So she went to the airport and waited an entire hour at baggage claim to confront Shipman. Shipman noticed someone following her and ran to her car and locked the doors. And then Nowak ran to the window and started knocking on it and begging for a ride and started crying. So Shipman, like... rolled down the window a very tiny bit, at which Nowak stopped crying, sprayed pepper spray into the car, and Shipman was like, what the heck? And so she drove to the, like, parking lot attendant and was like, yo, call the police.
She was like, I drove here and I can't see pepper spray in my eyes.
That was my thought. I was like, that is not a safe driving condition. So the police, like, pretty immediately arrived because police are pretty prevalent at airports, mm-hmm. especially since this was post 9/11. She was immediately arrested and held without bond for a while. And the day after she was arrested, she was placed on a 30-day leave with NASA. And then after that 30 days, once the investigation was complete, they actually fired her. But she was charged with attempted kidnapping and burglary with assault, which makes her the first active duty astronaut to ever get charged with a felony.
I mean, yeah, generally you can't go to space, you know, if you're a crazy person.
Yeah. So she ended up pleading insanity and got her entire case sealed, which is why we don't have, like, way more information about this. But some of her close friends are thinking that she had suffered a psychotic break because in 2003, when the Columbia shuttle exploded, one of Lisa's close friends was one of the astronauts that died. Mm-hmm. But before this happened, NASA only did one psych eval, and it was, like, when the astronauts were hired, and then they never did it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They now do them annually, which is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
She was also dubbed by the media as an astronaut, which is pretty insensitive, but maybe true.
Media
definitely
puns.
True.
As of 2016, she is in Texas. Very little is known about her whereabouts, but her attorneys have said she is doing well. And fun fact, Oflin, her, like, ex,
Oflin.
Yeah, however you say it, and Captain Shipman, they married in 2010 and they have a kid and they're hanging out in Alaska.
Yeah, so I would very too. Far away from Texas.
Yeah, yeah. So
you can't drive to Alaska without crossing some borders.
Anything you'd like to repeat?
No.
Sweet. So yeah, I'm glad they're living a happy life or something.
Yeah,
maybe. Or something. That someone's happy in that.
So that is the story of Lisa Nowak, and it's pretty interesting.
Sweet. Georgia, do yours.
Nope.
Well, I tried. Steve, do yours.
Mine, I'll do mine now. So my crime took place in 1859 Ooh. In Washington, D.C. The murder being a man named Daniel Sickles. He was a U.S. congressman, war hero, minister to Spain, compulsive womanizer, major general in the U.S. Army.
Ooh.
During the Civil War, obviously.
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 As someone who doesn't know history, that was not obvious to me, so thanks for the clarification.
Okay. Yeah, his brigade in the Civil War was known as the Excelsior Brigade.
Mm. That just reminds me of the episode of Archer.
Reminds me of Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Also that.
Excelsior. He was wounded by cannon fire and had to amputate his leg.
It sucks.
He earned the Medal of Honor for this. He devoted considerable...
He earned a Medal of Honor for getting his leg cut off?
He cut off his own leg after getting hit by a fucking cannonball. That's insane.
I don't think he amputated his leg.
Oh, well, in my mind...
Someone did.
Yeah.
That's how you get medals. You get hurt.
Yeah. Mm,
that's true.
I thought you had to do something that was honorable whilst getting hurt.
No.
If you just get your leg blown off because you're an idiot, why do you get a medal for that?
Welcome I mean, to America. You're not just, like, in Louisiana, like, trying to break into a TGI Fridays. You're in, like, Iraq or something and getting shot.
They are in Louisiana.
Civil War was in America.
Oh, well.
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear.
I forgot what we were talking about.
Anyway.
He devoted considerable effort trying to gain credit for helping achieve the Union victory at Gettysburg, including testifying before a Congress saying that Major General George G. Meade, who was taking credit for that victory, was ousted. He's also key in getting Gettysburg to be a national military park.
Oh.
At this time, Sickles was married to his wife, Teresa.
That's a dumb name.
They married when Sickles was 30 and Teresa was 17.
Oh. Cradle Robin.
Her parents did not like that. So they married in secret in September of 1852. Now let's fast forward to February 24th, 1859.
It's almost my mom's birthday.
1859?
Yeah, my mom's real old.
I mean,
it's February 24th.
It is almost your mom's birthday.
Yeah.
You should get on that.
Yeah.
So it's a Thursday evening. Mm-hmm. It's the last day Congress is going to be in session for the rest of the month. Sickles goes home where his wife is entertaining a journalist from the local newspaper who he was in good with, probably why he was so...
Entertaining or entertaining?
It was a woman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I mean, that doesn't mean anything. They also had lesbians back then.
It's 1859.
No one was gay until the late 1800s, early 1900s, obviously.
Anyway, so they had plans that night to go out to the Willard Hotel, where they would get dinner and then go to a hop, which I'm assuming is like a dance party.
Okay.
Sock hop?
Yeah, it was like a dance.
But they didn't have socks for this one.
I'm sure they were wearing
socks. Weren't invented yet.
It's a whole group of them, the journalist's wife, and then her husband. They were going to go out. They all decided to get into a carriage and go to the hop. But Daniel had been sitting all day and wanted to walk. So he decides to walk.
With one leg?
Yes.
Okay.
He decides to hop.
That's why it's called a hop.
But while he's doing this, a strange messenger arrives and hands him an envelope that is not postmarked or anything. He doesn't read it at the moment. He just puts it in his pocket and just goes to the hop.
It's probably dark and there's no electricity, so he can't read it.
Probably. Anyway, while he was walking and his wife got there first, she started talking to a man by the name of Philip Barton Key II.
Ooh, cool name.
Guess who his father is?
Francis Scott Key.
Bingo.
Nice.
Yeah, suck my dick, everybody. I know shit.
My mind just exploded a little bit.
Yeah, right? Podcast over. Sanjay wins.
He was a U.S. attorney at the time who Sickles had actually helped get him appointed, because at the time Sickles was in tight with Buchanan, who he had influence and helped get Philip Barton Key into that position, also known as Barton Key. Anyway, so they have a jolly good time. They're kind of smitten, but then he gets there and they quickly go away separate ways. Anyway, everything goes fine. Then they go home and Teresa goes to bed. Sickles decides to open the letter. This is what it says. This is crazy. "Dear sir, with deep regret, I enclose to your address the few lines, but an indispensable duty compels me to do so, seeing that you are greatly imposed upon. There is a fellow, I may say, for he is not a gentleman by any means, by the name of Philip Barton Key, and I believe the district attorney who rents a house of a Negro man named of, I don't know how to say this, Joe A. Gray, situated on 15th Street between K and L Street, for no other purpose than to meet your wife, Mrs. Sickles. He hangs a string out the window as a signal to her that he is in and leaves a door unfastened, and she walks in, and sir, I do assure you that he has as much use of your wife as you have. With these few hints, I leave the rest for you to imagine. Most respectfully, your friend, R.P.G. Yeah. Fun letter.
Yeah.
At the time, he has no idea who sent this. He has no idea who RPG is.
Yeah.
And still to this day, has no idea.
Still to this day?
Yes.
His ghost is just, like, hanging out.
He's still searching the phone book.
Exactly.
His ghost is like, who cut this a bench?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't die until he was 94.
Dang.
Yeah. Obviously, he's a little distraught by this.
Yeah.
The next day, Friday, he tries to ask some people what's going on, like if anyone else heard. And it turns out there's a large rumor going around the capital of this affair. And then on Saturday, he goes and confronts his wife about it. Obviously demands her telling exactly what happened, what the extent of it was, and she just spills everything. All the information. And then he even makes her sign a letter of confession.
Spicy.
Yeah. And then finally the next day, it's Sunday, and he sees Philip Barton Key walk into Lafayette Square, which is right outside the White House. And he's waving a handkerchief, which he uses to get the attention of Teresa. Immediately feeling compulsive, he has a friend run interference because he wants to keep Philip in the square. Goes and prepares. He gets three revolvers all cocked, ready to go.
That seems excessive.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about this part. Scott Key was also a womanizer as well. Stating to have said before, I only need 36 hours with any woman to make her do what I please.
Ooh.
Yeah.
He's actually just a hypnotist, so.
So anyway, so Sickles advances on Key moments later, who is unaware that there is now hostilities between the men. Key reached out a hand, asking a customary, how are you? As he did, however, Sickles produced a hand of his own, which was gripping a pistol. Loudly he proclaimed, Key, you scoundrel, you have dishonored my house. You must die.
You scoundrel.
Barton barely had a chance to respond, what for, when the gunshot shattered the relative silence of Lafayette Square.
Oof.
He missed.
Oh.
Idiot.
I mean, he brought three. I mean, he must have known he was a bad shot.
That one was a warning shot.
He has to have a good balance. Yeah. You know, he's missing a leg.
No, he just sneezed, like, right when he was, like, you step, shoot, and shot the ground.
So then the two got into a small skirmish, each one trying to gain an advantage over the other. Sickles quickly broke free and was able to reach into his coat and produce another firearm, which he unloaded in the direction of Key, who cried out, don't shoot me! Murder! Don't murder me! Murder! Sickles was uncaring about the man's pleas and quickly advanced on his fallen rival. He hit Key once in the torso and then walked up and point blank shot him in the head.
Damn.
Yeah, so this is a very public square.
Yeah.
There's tons of people around. And instantly he's arrested. Mm-hmm. And set for trial. But of course, he gets a crack law team. Because, mm-hmm. you know, he's
rich and famous.
So this is a trial of the age. It's known as the greatest, or it's known to be on a national scale equivalent to the OJ trial.
Oh. Fuck.
Yeah. However, he walked free because it's the very first time that temporary insanity was used in a case.
Interesting.
As a alibi. And it worked.
That's cool. I mean, not for everyone else, but it's an interesting fact.
Yeah.
I don't think that's... I guess temporary just means that it, like, isn't standing forever. But, like, he was there and was like, hey, fuck that guy. Craig, make sure he doesn't leave. Hobbles home.
I think you just have a problem guns. With people named Craig because you always pick the name Craig.
That's, like, my go-to name. I don't know why. But he, like, hobbles home, which probably took at least 30 minutes, right? Like, it had to take him a while. So. Like, gets, like, loads all of his revolvers, puts them in strategic pockets, hobbles back, and is still like, yeah, fuck that guy. Like, that was, like, a long...
Also, that would be really ballsy to make sure that they were all loaded and cocked, and then he put them in his pocket.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
There's, like, the first recorded death on Mount Rainier happened because a guy had a gun that was loaded, and it fell out of his pocket and shot him when he was leaning over the fire. First recorded death on the mountain. And it was in the winter, so his family couldn't get up the mountain pass to get his body. So they kept it in an aluminum tub through the winter because it was cold enough that the body wasn't going to decompose.
Yeah.
And then no one ever came and got him, so they buried him in the tub. I have pictures of his... He doesn't really have a grave. It's just a little spot in the woods, and then there's a metal hoop.
It's gross and sad.
So, wow. But I have pictures of it. Yeah. Fun fact.
That's a real spicy story, though. Yeah. Wait, so this, like, Key bought a house just so he could fuck this guy's wife?
Yeah.
Wow, that's commitment.
It is.
Like,
also,
damn.
He's clearly much more financially stable than any of us.
Yeah.
True.
Even though he became less involved in the political scene, he stayed with Teresa.
Hmm. Nice. It's because she was scared.
Her actual husband?
Yeah, Sigils.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a dumb name.
Barton Key
think of dead. Harry Potter.
Is dead.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
His brains
true.
Are probably still somewhere on the Lafayette Square.
Yeah, to this day, you can see the weird squiggles, you know, where his brain chips were.
Yeah. Squiggles.
His squiggles. His Star Spangled Bloody.
Shut up. You're so dumb.
Get it? Because Francis Scott Key wrote Star Spangled Banner.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he was still alive at that point? And he's like,
he like, died
when my son no
I can't remember he died when Daniel was 10.
Damn, so he didn't get to see his son grow up to be a big slut and then get murdered for it.
True. He would have been proud.
Yeah, I think so. He's like, that's the American dream.
That's my boy.
Yeah, that's my boy.
Cool. Well, you want to talk about some serial killers?
Heck yeah.
Tony Harris is hanging out in this gay bar not long after one of his friends, Roger Goodlett, goes missing. And he sees this guy who's looking at the missing persons poster all obsessively and creepily.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony goes, he later told police, I just had a feeling, by the way, he was captivated by the poster, that he was the man who killed my friend. Something in his eyes. So he introduces himself to this guy to see if he can find out anything or whatever. And the guy introduces himself as Brian Smart, a landscape artist from Ohio who was living inside this empty house outside of town that he was getting ready for the new people to move into. And so he says to Tony, let's go back there for a cocktail and a swim.
All right.
Tony's like, all right, cool. Tony is ballsy already.
Yeah, right?
So they get into Brian's gray Buick. And
good car.
Tony didn't really know where they were going. I mean, this was the 80s, 90s, early 90s, so, you know, Buicks were the hot commodity.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony didn't really know where they were going, but he could tell by the Tudor-style housing that they were heading into rich people territory in, like, Carmel or Westfield, which is outside of Indianapolis. And he was, like, trying to mentally take notes of everything so he could kind of report back to the police later. So Brian takes him down to the basement of the house. There's a wet bar and an indoor pool that was surrounded by mannequins staged in various positions.
All right, that's terrifying.
This guy diddles mannequins.
So, the fact that he stayed when he saw that is already impressive.
Right.
And then Brian says that he gets lonely and they keep him company.
Mm-hmm. Very sane, yes. So, incredibly sane.
He tries to offer Tony drinks, but Tony's like, no, I'm good, because he's worried that they're roofied.
Yeah.
So, Brian goes away for a second and comes back, and he seems different, like he's chattier and friendlier. And Tony's like, that guy just snorted coke, I'm pretty sure. Cool. So then Brian convinces Tony that they should go for a swim. So they get naked and they get in the pool. And eventually Brian says, I just learned this really neat trick. And he grabs some of the hose that's by the pool. And he says, if you choke someone while you're having sex, it feels really great. Oh, you really get a great rush. You just want to pinch these two veins. It's such a great buzz. You should see how someone looks when you're doing it to them. Their lips change color. That's how you can tell it's working.
That's murder.
So then Tony's like, holy shit, is this what happened to Roger? Mm-hmm. So Brian is like, do it to me. And then he lies down and lets Tony, like, put the hose around his throat while Brian tickles his own pickle.
Oh.
Then Brian's like, let me do it to you. And Tony's like, fuck, I don't really
say no.
I don't really have a way of getting out of this. So he lets Brian choke him, and then he pretends to pass out. And Brian kind of seems to freak out a little bit, and he shakes Tony. And then he just opens his eyes and grins. And Brian's like, you scared the shit out of me. You know you can die doing this. There have been accidents. And then Tony goes, is that what happened to Roger?
What a...
Right? So eventually, for whatever, probably because he did a bunch of coke, Brian eventually passes out. And Tony decides to do a little poking around the house, and he thinks that the landscaping story is bullshit, and he, like, finds evidence that a family lives here. And so he is trying to find an ID to confirm Brian's identity, but he wakes up, and so Tony convinces him to drive him back to the city. But they make plans to meet the following Wednesday. And when he drops him off, Brian tells Tony that he really knows how to play.
I mean, I guess. I don't... Mm-mm.
Brian stood up Tony that Wednesday, and no one really saw Brian for about a year until August 1995, when he showed up at a different bar that Tony just happened to be at having a drink. And so Tony waited there until he left and then saw what car he got into and wrote down the license plate. And then he gives that to the police. Tony's hardcore, almost undercover here.
He's also doing the right things. He's not just clever. Going home to get guns and murdering a guy in a public square.
So, the license plate comes back to be belonging to Herb Baumeister.
Herb Burner.
And he denies the police permission to search his home, but his wife is kind of terrified at this point, and Herb goes out of town for a weekend the next summer, June of 1996, and his wife takes the opportunity to call the police and tell them about a skeleton that she'd found in her backyard 2 years earlier.
Oh my goodness.
And he had told her that it was just because his dad was an anesthesiologist or something, I can't remember, but he had dissecting skeletons. And so Herb just told her that it was one of those that he had found in the garage, and he just buried it to get rid of it.
Yeah, just to, like, put the soul to peace or whatever.
So, while Herb is gone, his wife lets them search the house. And in the yard, she shows them, like, where she found the skeleton. And the police turn up bone fragment after bone fragment after bone fragment. And they, I think in the first 30 minutes that they had a team of anthropologists out there, you know, like, they flag everything that could be evidence, and the whole backyard was just covered in flags. So they search the house too, and they find the pool and the mannequins, and they also find a hidden tape recorder, which they suspected he used to record
the diddling.
The strangulating.
When he beats his own meat. He likes to, you know, have a recording of it to remember. And like, oh yeah, that was a good beat.
Yep.
It was good.
So they find a total of 11 bodies worth of bones, bone fragments, and teeth in his backyard. But only four of those bodies were identified, including Roger. And Herb is still out of town, but by now he knows that shit's going down. So instead of going home, he drives to Canada and shoots himself in the head after writing a 3-page suicide note.
Oh my.
And he placed the blame on his failing business, which was affecting his marriage.
And what was his business?
He founded the Save-A-Lot thrift stores, which are in the Indianapolis area. Not to be confused with the Save-A-Lot grocery stores.
Okay, the Save-A-Lot grocery stores are in, like, Pacific Northwest,
yeah,
right?
There was a Save-A-Lot by my school, right? Yeah. There were only two Save-A-Lot thrift stores. But apparently they were really successful in the 90s.
Probably because the guy was like, I killed myself because
yeah. I'm gonna take all of his clothes and put them in my thrift store.
Exactly.
Jesus.
Dude, that's a business, though. Like,
I mean,
just
that's one way to get rid of evidence.
I mean, exactly. That's, like, adjacent to the story of Sweeney Todd. Like,
True.
Actually, yeah.
Turns out that he didn't say anything about the bodies in his backyard, so he never actually confessed. But the evidence is all there. And he fits into the category of a lust killer. And he's also attributed with the I-70 murders that happened between 1980 and 1990, where strangled bodies kept coming up along the stretch of I-70.
Yeah.
And they stopped when he and his wife bought their house because he had a place to bury them. So, yeah, he and his wife had sex only 6 times in their 25 years of marriage, resulting in 3 children, but she never saw him naked.
Oh.
He had some issues.
Never nude.
Yep, never nude. There are literally dozens of us.
So, yeah, that's our Bowmeister. Tells you about the kind of people that come from Indiana.
Yeah, true.
God, my mom's already mad at me, though. I just said that. My mom's from Indiana.
Hey, Hope, you're going to go again.
Okay. But do you not have a second story?
No, I do.
Have a question?
I
have a question.
Wait, okay. Ooh.
Oh.
So, you start at the very beginning.
Yeah.
He just felt like this guy murdered his friend?
Mm-hmm.
With no other information? Just in a gay bar, looking across, like, oh, it's like a guy who killed my friend.
Yeah.
It was, okay, you know how serial killers oftentimes keep, like, trinkets or something because they like to be reminded of their crimes. So there's also missing persons posters of some of the people that he's killed. So if he, like, sees one of them, he's kind of compelled to, like, obsess over it a little bit. Something about his mannerism that creeped out the guy who saw him looking at it.
So he was like, why does that guy have a boner looking at my friend's missing persons
yeah,
poster?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty fucked, though. You still can't do that. Like, what if he just, like, was like, oh, man, I hope that guy's okay, and he, like, got lost looking into this poster, like, that guy had a family. He had friends.
There was...
And then, like, 10 feet away, someone's like, that guy looks like a fucking murderer.
That's
and he's just sad.
Just go, like, to the police. He, like, figured out that he was a murderer.
That's still
He got
though.
More creeped out by him before he was like, I think this guy did something.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if it wasn't his house.
It was his house.
The one that they went to?
Yeah.
The pool party?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said it wasn't.
He told Tony that it wasn't his house. But his wife and his kids were out of town that weekend. That's why when he was snooping around the house, he was like, no, it looks like a family lives here. It was his family. They were just out of town visiting. I think they were visiting his parents, so their kids' grandparents. And, yeah. That's why... They found the police stuff. The police found the pool and everything when they were investigating, and they found the mannequins.
I don't know. Yeah. If, like, my partner of, like, 20-something years was like, hey, we should get a house with a pool, and I was like, that sounds cool, and, like, indoor pools are sweet, and I'm like, here's the thing, though. We're gonna surround it with mannequins. And, like...
Yeah.
Like, why?
It's always a pool party.
It's always a pool party, yeah. Like, I'd call the police immediately. Like,
do you think the mannequins were all in, like... cute bathing suits, and like some were holding like a pool noodle, and one was like got an inner tube on.
I think they had like ball gags in their mouth and like shit tied around their neck.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what actually happened, but I think it's.
I wonder if there's I wonder if there are pictures of the mannequins anywhere.
They couldn't have been the kink mannequins because there were still kids in the house, you know?
That's true. Unless the kids weren't allowed in the pool. Okay. They were like, what's the point of having a pool if you won't let us swim in it?
It's like the pool's for fucking, not for swimming.
Okay, also, he, like, was murdering people in the house, so I don't think he was too concerned about what the kids were, like, thinking.
He was, like, hardcore dissociative.
Yeah.
You, like, couldn't get figured out, though. And if, like... You're just at school. So my mom's a preschool teacher right now. I think I might have told this story before.
That's awful.
But yeah, it's okay. She's not super happy sometimes, but it's all right. She likes older kids because they're actually people, and like little kids are just like little screen boxes. So some of the kids, like parents, will get arrested because, you know, life sucks. And one day this kid like came in and they were just really sad, and another kid was like, hey, what's wrong? And the kid was like, my mom's in jail for choking my dad. And another kid's like, she got arrested again? And they're like, yeah. And another kid walked up and said, it's okay, my mom's in jail too. She tried to kill my dad. And then someone else was like, hey, my mom's in jail too. And they all just started talking about how their moms went to jail or are in jail for like trying to kill their dads.
Holy
and they're
shit.
Like, six, right? Like, they're five or six. And my mom's just standing there like, what in tarnation? And, so imagine, that's like, you can't do this. It'd be the same thing.
Would
like,
your mom actually say what in tarnation?
No, she didn't. She's a normal person. but imagine, like, going to school and someone's like, I'm gonna have a pool party. You're invited. And you're like, I have a pool, but I can't swim in it. Like, why can't you swim in your pool, little kid? Or, like, youth? And the kid's like, because my dad and his fun friend mannequins are all there. Like, what's a fun friend mannequin? Like, well, they all have things in their mouths, and they wear a lot of leather, and they've got weird collars on them. But my dad says they're only for fun, and they're not for kids. And, like, that would happen, probably. And this is like, you know, you can't have your kids looking at your diddle mannequins.
It reminds me of this investigative murder porn episode of South Park, which
I have not seen that episode.
One of my most favorite episodes. It's where, like, all the parents get super... instead of watching porn together, they all start watching investigative murder porn. And then one of the dads actually kills the mom. And so, like, the kids all freaking out at school, and the kids are like, fine, we gotta do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
So they get child locks put on the cable boxes, but they're, like, against the parents.
Yeah.
And the password, like, the question is, how do you tame a horse in Minecraft? So then all of the parents start playing Minecraft to try and figure out how to unlock the child locks. But then they start killing each other in Minecraft instead of
in real life.
And it's really funny. Did I explain that accurately?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. It's one of my favorite episodes.
In my head also, like, all the mannequins are, like, 80s and 90s figures. So there's, like, OJ's by the pool. Bob Ross is by the pool. Mr. Rogers is by the pool.
That is very disturbing.
Sigourney Weaver.
Sigourney Weaver's by the pool. Who's the lady from Beetlejuice?
Winona Ryder.
Yeah, Winona Ryder's by the pool.
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson's by the pool.
Which, Thriller Michael Jackson?
Thriller Michael Jackson.
Obviously. Yeah.
Prince is by the pool. Little red Corvettes playing on the background.
David Bowie.
David Bowie's by the pool. Sweet. Oh, your turn. Oh.
Okay, so this is like...
Related.
My favorite murder ever. Like,
you can't say that.
So weird.
We will literally get the shit sued out of us. You can't say other podcasts.
Okay,
that's not another
this
podcast.
This is an opinion.
That's a descriptive terminology.
Georgia, beep that out. We can't get sued.
Also, we can do what we want because my name is also Georgia.
That's true. Also, like... My favorite murder, the podcast.
I just said like a minute ago not to do that.
Loves referencing other podcasts. So shout out to Karen and Georgia who will never hear this, but it's the best podcast.
I also talk about other podcasts all the time.
Yeah.
Never happened.
So. Okay. So, yeah, this is like the most interesting and honestly I could talk about this for like way longer than we have, so I'm gonna kind of condense it, but this is the murder of Trevor Alexander, done by Jody Arias.
What are their nicknames?
Probably Trevor and Jody.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah.
So, T-Boy and JoJo.
Yeah.
So, also, when you go to Murderpedia, they have all of the crime scene photos of this.
Oh, shit.
And they are super disgusting, and it's super cool. But I won't post them because I don't think that Instagram will let me.
What a surprise. You can't have murder pictures on Instagram?
Yeah, especially when he was stabbed 29 times. So, yeah. So, Jodi Arias is Trevor Alexander's ex. Mm-hmm. And
GFBF.
So, they dated in, like, 2007 to 2008. It might have started before then. That doesn't matter. On June 2nd of 2008, a bunch of people were trying to get in touch with Trevor, and they couldn't. And nobody got in touch with him for like 4 or 5 days. But also, so he had 2 roommates, and they didn't think that it was weird they hadn't seen him. But I guess they also were like kind of doing their own thing and like pretty high all the time. So they were just like, whatever, where is Trevor? I don't know. And then after a couple days, they were like, something weird. There's something weird and smelly coming from room that has a bathroom attached. Mm. So they go in the bathroom, and his body is there in the shower. There is blood everywhere. Mm-hmm. Because he was stabbed 29 times.
Looks like that bath turned into a bloodbath.
Hey, you hate puns? That was so exciting.
I put sunglasses on in my head when I said that.
I could tell.
NCIS style?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah!
Trevor's, door had been locked, and they had to, find a key once they started smelling weird stuff. Mm-hmm. And they did also call 911 pretty much as soon as they, found the body. So the friends, were unobservant, but did the right thing here.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, the 911 dispatchers were like, oh, was he suicidal or something? Because, these kids were apparently not good at explaining how this was clearly a murder scene and not a suicide scene. And immediately, his friends were like, no, he wasn't suicidal. Also, Jodi Arias did this. She is weird. Mm-hmm. They, broke up sort of recently. Pretty sure she did it. So, they, the police find out that Arias had been stalking Alexander, and accessing his Facebook account and slashing his car tires.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. So, after they had broke up, she had moved, across the country, I think to, doesn't matter, and I can't find it. She had moved across the country and just happened to, be out of town. When they contacted her grandparents that she lived with,
mm-hmm.
Her grandparents are like, yeah, I think she went out of town. And so the police were like, that's really convenient timing. So they finally tracked her down. And at first she's like, oh my gosh, he's dead? That's terrible. I was really close to him. I can't believe that happened. They, end up, slowly getting more proof because, they find her with a gun and a knife. And just, she's being pretty suspicious.
Just going on a hunting trip.
Yeah. And one of the weirder things is they ended up finding a camera in the washing machine of Trevor Alexander. And the camera had, gone through the wash. So the camera itself was ruined, but there was an SD card inside that had not been deleted. Nice. And it was a bunch of pictures of Trevor and Jodi in very sexual positions in the shower. But then there were also pictures of his dead body and all these stab wounds. Mm-hmm. And so the police were like, hey, Jodi, is this your camera? And she's like, oh yeah, I wondered where that went. And they're like, oh, it was broken in the washer. And you found out she put it in the washer and just assumed that if you ruined a camera in the washer that mm-hmm. all of the evidence would be gone.
Yeah.
But didn't even delete the SD card.
Wait, what year was this?
This was 2008. And they could have gotten the data off of the SD card anyways, even if she had deleted it. Mm. But she didn't even try.
Mm-hmm.
Are all these super graphic pictures of him in the tub. There's a couple that she later claimed the camera must have just gone off by itself because it was of his body being dragged, which is pretty weird, but whatever. But yeah, it shows him like profusely bleeding on the bathroom floor. They also found a bloody palm print on the wall in the bathroom hallway.
Titanic style.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it had DNA from both Jody and Trevor, which was good because at first Jody was like, no, I haven't seen him. Like, that's weird. And then they were like, your DNA is at the scene. And she's like, oh, that's right. I actually did see him. And then they arrested her. And during, like, the first court case, she was like, okay, I know I said I didn't see him, but here's what actually happened. He was super abusive, and he tried to kill me, so I stabbed him, and it was all self-defense.
It's and, like that meme that's like, I need you to call an ambulance, but not for me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And even, like, nobody at the trial believed her. They were like, this is a very obvious lie. Like, not only did she completely change her story about even seeing him, but she literally sounds like she's making it up on the spot. Like, I've heard some of the clips, and she's just like, oh, he was abusive, actually. And, like, you know, on some level, they do have to take that kind of, like, like accusation. So they ended up, like, talking to a bunch of, or, like, a bunch of Trevor's friends and, like, other exes and, like, the girl he was kind of talking to at the time. And they all were like, no, like, he was the, like, most kind, like, person. He, like, continually asked for, like, consent for everything. Was just, like, very caring, wouldn't hurt anybody. And with all of that and plus, like, the, like, stalking that Jody was doing, like, it was very obvious that there was no abuse. And she ended up being convicted and is now, like, being held with no possibility of parole for first-degree murder. But, like, listening to her interviews is so weird because she still is just like, oh, yeah, like, I, like, I'm a victim of domestic violence. Like, I can't believe I'm in here. But, like, listening to her talk, she just sounds like someone having a very normal day and just, like, asked to be interviewed. Oh, also during the trial, like, before she said it was self-defense, she also said that, like, she and Trevor had been hanging out that night, which, again, contradicted her first story. And then she was like, and two random intruders broke into the house and killed him, and I barely escaped with my life. And they were like, dude, how many stories can you even, like, have here? So it finally, like, the case, or the trial ended on May 7th of 2013, which, I'm bad at math, that's, like, 5 years after the murder. Yes. Yeah, so at first, there was a mistrial because there was a hung jury, but then they did it again, and all of the jury was like, she definitely murdered this dude. She's like, crazy. There's no way around this. And just, like, I mean, you can't convict somebody for this, but, like, in the middle of the trial, she, like, completely changed her hair color and, like, haircut and was just, like, clearly spending a lot of time, like, making herself, like, more attractive or, like, differently attractive, which is not generally what you're focused on when you're being convicted of murder.
She was gonna be on TV, though.
No, yeah, she, like, took every single interview that was offered because she was like, oh, I love being on TV. So, yeah, it's a really crazy story. There are a whole lot more details. So if anybody is interested, pretty much every true crime podcast has done an episode on Jody Arias because it's really just weird and a lot to unpack. So, yeah, but... also, if you go to Murderpedia, there are the super, like, super graphic pictures of his body in the shower, with all the, like, stab wounds and all the blood, like, all over the bathroom.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes, so, but, like, with a view at your own risk thing.
Yeah, well, even the link itself on Murderpedia has, like, several warnings that says, warning, the following photos are graphic and may be disturbing. Honestly, I hope they're disturbing to everyone. I hope nobody's like, oh, this is a fun picture. I'm going to make this my background. Because it's very gruesome. But yeah.
She was all panic and no disco.
That's true.
Yeah. Don't like it.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
Thanks. Also, I will put a picture of this, but, like, look, this is her mugshot, and she's just, like, smiling. Like, this Yay. Could be taken at, like, a restaurant. Like, she's just, yeah. like, posing.
It looks like she's at a Ruby Tuesday, 100%.
Yeah. So.
Tell by the background. Lots of Tuesday.
Yeah.
Easy on the Ruby.
It was real fun.
Mm-hmm. It's not really fun.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Okay, actually, real fast aside, so I am a corrections officer, and I'm also awkward and bad at talking. The other day, I was, like, walking into work, and one of the detectives was, like, walking in the hallway, and I was like, oh, hey, how's your day going? And he's like, oh, it's, like, been a really long day. Like, we just arrested somebody for attempted murder. And me being myself and being awkward was like, oh, that's cool. And then I was like, I mean, sorry.
No, you're on a watch list somewhere. About your long 100%. Day. Like.
So, yeah.
So, forewarning, I just chose the story because the word cuck was in the, like, opening description. And it made me laugh, which is not how the story should actually go. So, my second murder is Martha Freeman and the murder of her husband, Jeffrey Freeman. They had the same last name because they were in love. So,
obviously not anymore.
Yeah, not he's dead. So, yeah
well, obviously. I mean, obviously not for long.
So, a beginning twist. Martha Freeman actually didn't murder her husband. She was murdered by Rafael de Jesus Roca Perez, an immigrant that was living in a closet in their house. So,
I've heard this story, and it's so weird.
Yeah.
Was he paying rent, or?
No, so.
Did they both know that he lived there?
One of them knew, and that was it.
Did she employ him as a hitman?
Nope. So, the cuck, Rafael, was living in a 2x8 closet in the house of the Freemans, where he was just, like, hanging out, just the boyfriend of Martha. He lived in the 2x8 storage space. When they, like, raided it later, there was just a foam pad, pillows, blankets, 3 loaves of bread, a Game Boy, a radio, and some adult magazines, as well as some of Martha's lingerie and, like, pictures of her, mod nude and very nude and very clothed. There were different, like, stages of her nakedness. So, I love first that he had a Game Boy and 3 loaves of bread, because that's just, like, a staple. Like, I could probably live off of that for a while. But, like, there was no water. There was no, like, real food. Like, no peanut butter and jelly. This dude was just chilling. He was like, oh, yeah, I got 2 Mega Man games and this, and that's all I need. Got Pokemon Red and Blue. Golden. This was in 2005, so I don't know also if he had an actual Game Boy, if he had, like, he probably had an SP. But so they were fucking. That's why he was there.
In the closet?
No. They were fucking around. Just wherever they wanted to was their life. So whenever the husband was leaving, Rafael would, like, come out, and the he and Martha would just, you know, like, get a little action. He was living there for a while, and one day they were sleeping in, Rafael and Martha were sleeping in a, like, side room, not the, like, main bedroom. And Jeffrey came home early from work and was like, what the fuck, dude? Why are you in my bed? What's going on right now? And she was like, it's okay. Like, don't worry about it. Like, it's fine. I can explain. And he's like, all right, well, I'm going to walk the dogs to cool off. And when I get back, we'll discuss this. So he just takes the dogs and leaves to go and get him a good poop or whatever. And Martha's freaking out with Rafael. And Rafael's like, I got this. Don't worry. So when he comes back, Jeffrey, like, comes into the door, and Perez grabs him by the collar and pulls him and, like, puts a gun to his back. Where'd he get a gun? Nobody knows. Big secret time. And leads him upstairs, and there's a lot of banging and, like, clattering sounds, like, stuff's getting knocked over, and Martha doesn't do anything. So later she's questioned, and, like, why didn't you call the police when you heard, like, very, like, audible sounds of abuse and of, like, danger going on? And she's like, well, I just didn't know what to do, and I didn't want to be hurt too, because clearly Rafael was unstable, and he was acting erratically. She goes upstairs, in the time that Rafael is upstairs with Jeffrey, she goes to pick up her antidepressants, as well as walk the dogs twice, and she eventually calls the police after she like takes her medication, and they timestamp it around 16 hours after his death that they arrived based on decay and whatever. He was dead face down in the bathroom with a trash bag wrapped around his face, and he was in a sleeping bag. Can you see Zero's paws under the door? Yeah. When they took the bag off, it became apparent that his head got like wrapped in the bag, and then he was beaten to death by Raphael. Initially, they both were charged with first-degree murder, and Martha's sentences got lessened because she was pretty much saying, like, I had nothing to do with it. Raphael was a good Christian man, and I just don't know why he would do anything like this. And he got charged with first-degree murder. When they, like, read the charges out, Martha was, like, very shocked. Raphael was like, okay. Like, just very non-responsive, like, knew it was coming, was just accepted at that point. So the moral of the story is, if you have a Game Boy, you're gonna murder your cookie's husband.
I think that was exactly my my parents' view on Game Boys.
Yeah, exactly.
If you have a Game Boy, you will get pregnant and die.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that's the story of how Jeffrey died, and he didn't really deserve it.
Yeah, that's sad.
He was the only innocent person in the story.
Literally. Like, everyone, I guess, initially Raphael was innocent, too. He just wanted to hang out, you know? He's like, is this what Americans do?
I don't think so, mm-mm. Because I think he would have left his closet if he didn't think something was going on.
I'll post a link in the show notes to this as well, when I initially find, or eventually find the article that, like, had more detail about, like, how long he was there, because I think he was there for a couple months, or it was, like, around a month or two. So he was just straight chilling for a minute. Stu, it's your time to shine.
All right. Mine's going to be about Maria Barbella.
Beautiful name.
Yes, she is her family immigrated from Ferrandina, Basilicata, Italy, to Mulberry Bend, New York in 1892.
Why are your stories from the 1800s?
Because that's when he was born.
Shut up.
Grumpy old man.
This is the time before Game Boys, so murders are more surprising. Mm-hmm. So after living in the United States for nearly a year, Maria Barbello met a man named Domenico Cataldo, who was from the same region of Italy.
Surprising.
She worked at a factory.
Small world.
Right. Mm-hmm. She worked in a factory, and every day she would pass by Cataldo's shoe shine booth.
This is a real April and Andy story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think it's better. They spent lots of time together, but they had to keep their meetings a secret from her, Maria's father. When he found out about Domenico, he forbade Maria from ever seeing or speaking to him again. Domenico continued to pursue Maria until she finally gave in and agreed to meet with him again. One day, he took Maria to a boarding house where he, speaking of Ruflin, he allegedly drugged her with the drink he bought her and then raped her. Because of her very strong morals of intimacy and marriage, Maria became upset afterwards and demanded that he marry her. Cataldo showed her a savings book with $400 deposit.
Whoa.
And promised to marry her. She continued to meet with him at the boarding house in hopes that he would consent to marrying her. However, he continued to put off the marriage for several months. In fact, he was already married to a woman in Italy with whom he had children. Barbella was devastated when Cataldo told her that he was returning to Italy and was ending their relationship. Barbella told her mother, and her mother confronted Cataldo, insisted he marry Barbella, and he said that he would only marry her if they paid him $200.
Ooh.
In New York City, on April 26, 1895, at approximately 9:30 a.m., Domenico Cataldo was playing cards in a saloon on East 13th Street. He had planned on boarding his ship and leaving for Italy that afternoon. Barbella entered the bar, and there was a brief exchange, where it is said that he announced in front of the whole bar that only a pig would marry her.
Well, that's rude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Barbella produced a straight razor and slashed his neck so swiftly, Cataldo had no chance to scream. He staggered out the door, clutching his throat with both hands, knocking Barbella over, spraying blood everywhere, and finally, as he reached Avenue A, he lurched off the curb and fell twitching into the gutter, where he died.
What the fuck?
I thought you were going to say he's got run over next.
So, obviously, this is a public thing.
Mm-hmm.
She got arrested. She was in jail for 2.5 months. Her appointed attorney, Amos Evans and Henry, nah, it doesn't matter. The trial had controversy because all the Italians thought that there were no peers because there were no Italians on the jury. Because, you know, back then, everyone's...
Yeah. I've seen Gangs of New York.
Exactly.
I haven't seen Gangs of New York.
You haven't seen Gangs of New York?
No,
that
I haven't.
That movie's amazing.
I've seen like 20 minutes of
it. It's really long, but it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Young Leo's in it, right?
It's not really my style movie either, but I actually enjoyed it, so...
Yeah, so there were no Italians on the jury, and Barbella couldn't speak or understand English.
Oh.
She admitted to everything. Seemed like the jury was being sympathetic, but they were not. The verdict was in court in accordance with the facts, and no other verdict could, in view of the evidence, have been considered. The jury declared Barbella guilty, and she was sent to Sing Song Prison, where she was sentenced to death by electric chair.
Electric.
Dang. Electric.
It's electric.
She was only the second woman in history to be sentenced to electric chair. Mm-hmm. However, she was given an appeal, and on November 16, 1896, she was given a second trial. This time, the counsel presented a much more sympathetic case, that she was a rape victim who experienced exasperated her pre-existing epilepsy. She allegedly suffered from a seizure and lost her reason. She was found not guilty and released from prison.
Wow.
I'd say my main takeaway from that is that the electric chair is way older than I realized.
it's electricity, probably.
Yeah.
Someone was probably like, this will open up my pores. And then they died, and they were like, wait a second, we're on to something.
Benjamin Franklin actually tied the kite to his chair with the key.
Wait, what year did that happen, the murder?
1858 or 7.
Okay, so the first use of the electric chair actually happened in 1890, but it was invented in, like, the late 1800s. So, that's super interesting. She could have been the first electric chair death.
One side said that she was the first, but the other side said she was the second.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. Also, I'm kind of just, like... Clearly, they were interested in each other. I don't know why the guy was like, do you know what I should do? Roofie her in a hotel. Like,
yeah, he obviously didn't need to.
No,
unless she was just like, no, let's wait till marriage. And he was like, no, I want it, no.
Yeah.
Well, like another site says it. When she awoke beside Potato hours later in a bloody bed, he rejoiced in the fact that he had taken her purity.
Oh, gross. That's real creepy.
Yeah, this site's a little...
Yeah.
Well... you want to bring it back to Valentine's Day with romance?
Sure. Okay. It's rose petal scent.
Wait, also...
There we go.
Before I tell my second story, I did say I was going to give a shout out to Lorena Bobbitt, who cut off her husband's penis and threw it out of a car window onto the highway.
Yeah. Wasn't this in, like, the early 2000s? Or wasn't that...
It was in the 80s.
Was it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. It was a long time ago. She said that he was abusive and tried to rape her or something, but I think she was just kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So she cut off his peen and chucked it out the window. Yep. They eventually reattached it.
What if it was upside down, though?
I don't know. What if it looks like Frankenstein now?
Yeah,
Frankenstein. Like, can you imagine being in a car also on the highway, and then you just see, like, a peanut
like, hits your windshield, and you're like, what the fuck?
You're like, wow, they threw away a perfectly good Twinkie, and, like, I'm hungry, and then I'm like, nope.
That's gross.
That's a dick.
I wonder if he ever had sex with anyone again after that, and how would he explain the weird scar where his penis was reattached?
He's like, I'm a fucking celebrity.
I'm a survivor.
Exactly. There's probably, like, a weird niche for that, like, that kind of porn.
I don't know.
Rule 43.
Yep.
All right, we'll bring it back to romance. I'm going to tell you about Catherine Mary Knight. She was born in 1955, but she had a rough childhood. In 1974, she married David Kellett. However, things were great. They had a great marriage. On their wedding night, she tried to strangle him, later saying it was because he fell asleep after having sex only 3 times.
What?
That's fair. Weak shit. How dare he?
One time when she was pregnant with their baby, she burned all of his clothes and then hit him across the head with a frying pan, fracturing his skull.
Like, at the same time? Mm-hmm. Like, was burning clothes, and he's like, what the fuck, Helen? What's wrong with you? And she, like...
Because he, I think that was when he was in a dart tournament and they made it through to the finals, so he ended up coming home later than he thought. Mm. So she burned his clothes and then fractured his skull.
Nice.
With a frying pan. I would assume it's cast iron. I don't think you could do that with, like, some Teflon pan or some shit.
Might be able to.
Could.
Yeah.
You think you could fracture a skull with not a cast iron pan?
You'd have to, like, put some more, like, force behind it.
And get the right angle.
Yeah, that's like, true. Mm. If you get it with, like, the edge, kind of. Mm-hmm. All right, fine. Then after giving birth, he decided he was going to leave her for another woman, probably because she was batshit.
She's fucking crazy, yeah.
So Catherine freaks out. She ends up putting the baby on the railroad tracks and then goes around town threatening people with an axe.
She's like, can't get a babysitter. Let me just leave my baby here for a minute. Yep.
Just wanted to play with Thomas the Toy.
Yeah, exactly.
Thomas the Toy.
It's a toy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Have you seen Ant-Man?
Drew sent me a thing the other day that was like, what is it? Marvel movies ranked by how they feature trains. And Ant-Man said 9 out of 10 because there's a massive Thomas the Tank Engine.
A lot of them are zeros. Nope, no trains.
Thor, no trains in space.
That's absolutely beautiful.
Thor 2, what's the second, whatever. Thor 2. Still no space trains.
I'm like so glad a train,
somebody spent time on this list.
Yeah.
Someone had to rewatch all the movies to document any appearance of it. Wait,
it was great.
Isn't there a train in Thor 1 when they're in that? Because the town they're in is pretty, like, old-timey.
There might be Darcy's in the first there. One. It's been a really long time since I've seen
it.
Zero trains.
I can't remember which one it was, but it was like, finally there are trains in space!
I guess technically when they, like, all the Asgardians, spoilers for all the Marvel movies, whatever, when they get all the Asgardians onto one ship, that's kind of like a train, you know?
No.
Black Panther, they were like cool futuristic trains.
Oh yeah, with the...
And then...
Vibranium.
Captain Marvel, 11 out of 10. There are trains in space. Trains in space. There are finally trains in space. Also, she rides a train to Earth, too. Carol Danvers, queen of public transportation and of my heart. Avengers Endgame, no trains.
So, puts the baby on the railroad tracks, then goes around town threatening people with an axe. I think she got locked up for a couple days for being batshit again.
Yes.
Yeah. Old Ted saved the baby.
Did her baby die?
Old Ted saves the baby.
Oh.
I mean, it's just a fucking baby. It's just
like leave it there and walk completely away?
Yeah, she had accent to do.
Yeah.
She's a lumberjane.
She was busy.
Old Ted was like, shit, there's a train coming, and he got her the baby off the tracks. So then a few days later, she slashed a woman's face with a knife to scare her into driving her to find David. And she also threatened to kill the mechanic who fixed David's car, which enabled him to leave her. Because he went to a different town.
As you do.
Yeah. The woman, I think she drove, they stopped to get gas, and she escaped and called the police. But then Catherine takes a little boy hostage at the gas station and threatens him with a knife, too. I think, I don't know what happened.
And he's like, lady, I can't drive you anywhere. I'm not tall enough to reach the pedals.
So, she gets another boyfriend, whose name is also David.
She has a type.
She cut the throat of his 2-month-old dingo puppy.
Oh.
I know, it's real sad.
Dingo.
Just to show him what would happen if he cheated on her. And then she knocked him unconscious with a frying pan.
Man, there
Who keeps giving her frying pans?
Right, I know, right?
Is she just, like, also, that good of a cook where you're like, she might kill me, but
she
also...
She has a background in, like, frittatas. Butchering, like, butcher... She has these insane sets of butcher knives and stuff, so she's really good at meat carving.
She's only a level 1 serial killer, so...
Exactly, yes.
She can only equip a frying pan.
In another instance, she hit him in the face with an iron and then stabbed him in the stomach with a pair of scissors. And then he literally went into hiding.
Sweet.
Layla needs to learn how to have a conversation with people. Just like, hey, if you could not cheat on me, that'd be great. Not just, hey, this is what's going to happen if you do.
No, in my head, I think it was like...
Did you like this puppy? Too fucking bad.
Yeah. Like, oh, hey, remember we're going to dinner with Lacey and Frank tonight. And he's like, all right, cool. Are you ironing my shirt? Like, yeah, thanks. Actually, can you hear me? I don't know if you can. And then, like, hit him. And he was like, what the fuck, Gretchen? And then she stabbed him with scissors.
Mm-hmm. That was great. Mm-hmm. So, then she... dated another guy for 3 years before leaving him for the man she was having an affair with. So it's okay for her to have an affair, but not for them.
Yeah.
So she was having an affair with John Price.
Dang it, I wanted all of them to be named David.
I know, it would have been great. I don't know what the other guy's name was. He was just in the middle. Obviously she didn't stab him or anything, otherwise I think that would have been listed.
She needed the thrill, that's why she left.
So at this point, she has 3 kids with, I think, 3 different men, and then John has 3 kids of his own. And in 1998, she was like, let's get married. And he said, nah, dude, we're chill. Like, it's whatever. So she videotaped items that he had stolen from his job, which were just, like, out-of-date medical supplies that he literally took out of the dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
And then she sent the videos to his boss. And his boss didn't have a choice, so he got fired. So then he was like, all right, get out of my house.
Yeah, fair.
Reasonable.
Yeah. And then a few months later, they get back together, but he doesn't let her move in. But they still fight all the time. And in February 2000, she stabs him in the chest. So he's like, all right, get out. Again. And he took out a restraining order to protect himself and his children. And he tells everyone at work that if he doesn't show up the next day, it's because she killed him. Guess what? He doesn't show up for work the next day. His coworker's like, don't go home. But he was worried that if he didn't go home, she would just kill his kids instead.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's fair.
So I think that her kids aren't allowed to live with her, honestly, at this point.
Yeah, that makes sense.
She wasn't at his house, but she had sent all of the children away for a sleepover. So he hangs out, whatever, goes to sleep. And then she shows up at, like, after 11 sometime. Then they have sex.
As you do. Gotta get that pre-murder diddle.
And then he goes back to sleep. And around 8 o'clock the next morning, the police show up after neighbors report concern that his car is still there and it's not like him to miss work and maybe they heard what he told his coworkers or something. Who knows? So they go in. They find her passed out. She's taking a bunch of drugs to knock her out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, murder is a hard day's work.
Yeah, she's probably stressed out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they find him. She had stabbed him at least 37 times.
Yikes.
So he bled out. And then she skinned him and hung his body on a meat hook. And then she cut off his head and took some of his body parts. And she cooked them with potatoes, pumpkin, beetroot, zucchini, cabbage, yellow squash, and my favorite, gravy.
In a frying pan?
No, probably in a crock pot. Switching up her MO. And she set the table with 2 place settings. And they had little name cards next to them with his kids' names on them. And there was a 3rd meal that was thrown onto the back lawn. And they suspected that she tried to eat it herself and then couldn't do it. So she just, like, chucked it outside to get rid of it.
Is it because she's a bad cook or because there's, like, human bits in it?
I think the latter.
Okay. She's gonna say, like, if your food sucks, don't give it to the kids.
Yeah. So she tried to feed the kids for fun. She was the first woman to be sentenced to life imprisonment in Australia. I also noticed that both of my stories had to do with women complaining about lack of sex.
Also, so,
Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. I'd like to wrap up your story with crikey.
A dingo ate my baby.
That sucked.
She made a nice romantic meal, you know?
For the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Also, where was he hung up?
Who just has a meat hook?
Yeah, who just has a meat hook in their house?
They do, apparently. Maybe it's an Australian thing. Who knows?
I mean,
you did say she was super into, like, butchering.
No, she was a butcher. But still, I'm into a lot of shit that I don't just have hanging around my house.
Like, well, maybe they were super into catching their own meat, so it made sense for them to have a meat hook in their kitchen.
I mean, she was also crazy.
But, like,
so
where? Was it, like, in the lift?
Like, it was like in their, it was in their doorway somewhere around their kitchen, I think.
So it might have been just like a pull-up bar or something, or like a coat
it
hook.
It definitely said meat hook.
Anything can be a meat hook if you put meat on it.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. It's like if you have to walk through the doorway and you're like, oh, there's Dad's flayed corpse. Let me just move that out of the way. Mm-hmm. Oh, dinner. Thanks, Mom. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not going to happen.
So the kids never ate the food?
No, I don't think they'd come home yet.
Sweet. That's good.
When the police showed up.
I guess.
That is good.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Like, those kids are already going to have lifelong trauma, but at least they didn't eat their dad.
Where was the head?
I think she put it in a pot and, like, boiled it separately. That's, I think.
Why is that the thing that grosses me out the most? That's, I don't know.
I can't remember what you make with it, but one of, like, Hispanic families that cook. Mm-hmm. I've been to their house and there's boiling a cow head in the backyard.
Interesting.
Or goat head is, like, in the Middle East spot. Like, the goat head.
Isn't, like, brain supposed to be, like, really good? I know you, like, oh, fuck. There's, like, a tinga. Yeah. I think tinga is, like, cow brain. And you eat it on, like, tacos.
That a lucha.
I don't know. Either way, she was gonna eat brain.
Which, you know what happens when you eat brain? You get kuru.
No, you get smarter, yep.
You get prion diseases and die.
Yep.
Does anyone else have any last thoughts about passion murder time?
I'm really excited that I got to join, an episode of this podcast, mm-hmm. B, that I got to talk about murder on it.
Mm-hmm. Let's do...
favorite murder.
Yeah. Yep.
What are your thoughts?
Jolly good time.
Jolly good time? Murder! Murder!
So who just says murder? He's murdering.
Exactly, yeah.
Murder.
Have you seen the W or the Whitest Kids You Know sketch with the murder of Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah,
yeah, that's what that was. Yeah, exactly. Like, ow, he's hammering me in the butt. Ow, my butt. Like, what that reminds me of.
You have fucked up now.
Listen to the woman, John.
I just watched the Whitest Kids You Know movie.
Was
the first time.
Oh yeah. Movie. No, isn't that the one with like the neck belt? Is that movie? That might be something else.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's like a seatbelt, but it like goes around your neck for safety. but like it decapitates people. So in the video, or like in the demonstration, there's a mannequin and the car's going like 1 mile an hour and it like taps something and the mannequin head shoots out of the windshield.
I think I have seen that, but I don't know what it is from.
Yeah.
You have to look that up and tell me what it is. Okay. We'll put a link.
Do you have any last thoughts, Georgia?
No.
All right, thank you, everybody.
I'm hungry, actually, I think.
Me too.
Mm-hmm, too.
I want some pot roast.
Gross. It's the Onion movie. Never mind.
No.
Yeah. I'll always put a link to it. It's, like, pretty funny. I don't know.
WKUK, what is... stupid. Good. Really stupid, but still pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We did link the nail gun sketch, right?
I think we did, okay. Like, a long time ago.
It was, like, episode, like, 2. Nail gun! I'll go first. She murders his brother. Thank you for listening to Broadcast on the Belfry. If you liked what you heard, please feel free to leave a like or subscribe. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts, including iTunes. And... leaving a like and subscribe helps us a lot. I don't know how, but stats people do. If you want to contact us, feel free to do so by searching Broadcast from the Belfry on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or sending us an email at broadcastfromthebelfry@gmail.com. Thank you to Marshall for making the music that you hear at the beginning of this podcast. It's really sweet, and I couldn't have done it because I'm not talented like that. Did anyone else want to say anything? I think I said everything. Thank you again to Stu and Georgia. Not Stu and Georgia. Stu and Hope.
Your girlfriend's name.
I've forgotten more. I've forgotten less. For being on the airwaves. You guys are great. Solid 7 out of 10. Thank you for the train meme, Stu. They were good. Georgia, what do we say to the kind people? The kind, passionate people?
Wait, shout out to Tyler for sending us his selfie in his t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A beautiful man. Okay. Beautiful hair.
He has great hair. Yeah,
yeah, right. Mm. He's got the best hair.
Thanks for listening and stay spooky.
Sluts.
Lovers.